Welcome everyone to the Last Lap Pod. It's Tuesday that you're watching this. It's after the Belgian Grand Prix. And look, Niren, it was all right.
I think that is probably the absolute best way to describe that Grand Prix.
It was okay. There were a few takeaways which we'll go over, just the two of us.
No, the MCA.
But before... it was such a good rendition. YouTube ain't over now. No, but before we crack on, obviously, like, subscribe, 5-star. Do all that early, then we don't have to remind you later on.
Notifications on, all of that jazz.
Come on, please, I beg. But this is going to be, we're going to have a fun chat because there's a few topics we didn't touch on the live stream.
Yeah.
And that we will get into. But first of all, I guess we have to kind of briefly reflect on the race, which, like you say, wasn't a banger. But Max Verstappen now opens a 93-point lead.
Yeah.
Is this done now? Is it finished, championship?
I have a really bad feeling that it is. Obviously, the European leg now of the season is sort of coming to a close. That's when it's the business end of the season, it almost feels like.
Yep.
I'm starting to feel it's done. I'm starting to feel that Ferrari could just go on holiday for Zandvoort, pack up the bags, have a nice time abroad. I mean, their strategists have been doing that for the last 3 months anyway, but...
And they're still doing it, mate.
They're still doing it. Still did it today. Yeah, it's rough. I think at this point, Verstappen does have an unassailable lead. You know, Perez can't really match him consistently. He did at the start of the season, but on a consistent basis, it's not happening. Ferrari just keep tripping over themselves as well. And
I said for any opportunity for Leclerc to have still some kind of opportunity of winning this title, he needed Mercedes because they're the nearest team, they're third quickest team. Needed Mercedes to step up. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of talk before Spa about flexi floors and this kind of, you know, extra porpoising kind of management to make sure the skid plates are measured more strictly now so that you're not, you know, putting the driver's safety at risk ultimately. And there was a lot of hope, I think, not just externally, internally, like Lewis talked about, you know, he was hopeful they'd be like close and they were nowhere near in qualifying. In the race, the pace was good. Obviously, we didn't see too much from Lewis. It was okay. George still wasn't on the podium, so it wasn't anything that's going to take points away from Max, and that's the problem.
That's what
Charles needs. That
happening. I think obviously there's been a multitude of factors for Ferrari this season. Like ultimately, Charles has made his own mistakes as well. You know, he'll admit that. France, for example, was a big loss. I mean, I think Verstappen probably had the pace to win that Grand Prix, but. In the end, Leclerc at least threw away 18 points, at the very least, in that situation. And you can't... I said this at the start of the year. I think it was after, I want to say Spain, which was like problem two of the whole year. And it was like, you can't keep doing this. You can't throw away more than two Grand Prix and win the championship. And since then, they've thrown away a good three, four maybe, and multiple points, you know.
It's frustrating. And as well, when it comes to mistakes... They are very much measured by their outcome. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Max did do that little spin at Hungary, right? Yeah. The full 360, cracked on, still won the race.
Really stylish as well. Yeah, at least the nine.
It was finesse points off. Like you had Spain as well, where he went wide. Same place where Carlos went over the gravel, but carried on and managed to score like good points that weekend. So, you know, the mistakes that Charles has had, we saw it, you know, we saw it today. I mean, it's you're watching this Tuesday, but we're filming this just after the Grand Prix. Charles getting a 5-second time penalty for speeding, which you can't put on Ferrari. Like, you can put on Ferrari, then pitting him for fastest lap, but that's not that out of the ordinary.
Honestly, I think that summed up... That actually... You know, I've just realised I had an epiphany. That summed up all of Ferrari's problems the whole year. So, obviously, the first thing, the strategy, someone in the team had to look and go... Lads, I'm not going to lie, he's less than 20 seconds ahead of Alonso. This might be a bit of a risk here. He's not going to get out ahead of him and get the fastest lap, right? Yeah. So that's the strategy team. Mm-hmm. The actual team had to go, I'm not being funny, lads, he's not got the pace. You know, we were about a second away from Verstappen the whole time. Is this going to happen? And then Leclerc himself coming in, getting a 5-second penalty for speed in the pit lane. Like,
well, it wasn't what the difference in points between fifth and sixth is two. Yeah, it's one extra point for fastest lap.
He didn't even get fastest lap. This is the best part of it all.
Did you not even get fastest? And you had earlier in the weekend as well, you had what? Which, you know, you might say this is minor. You might say it's not a big deal. But, you know, putting Leclerc onto fresh softs, just to give science a toe.
Makes no sense, yeah.
Rather than scrubbed. Like, it's just little things like that that are, they demonstrate a broader issue. And you like to think, we went away for the summer break, there was all this, you know, heat on Ferrari, yeah. And Mattia Binotto, because ultimately he is the man at the top of that tree. And when you talk about business culture and business performance, doesn't matter what industry it is, you have to start at the top. And for them to, I mean, do you see this? Like, he's like, oh, there's nothing wrong.
There's nothing wrong. Yeah.
Hindsight's a beautiful thing, which is true, right? And I think there are certain instances where, you know, teams can make the right decision on paper at the time, but they're so, like, putting Leclerc on those hards. No one, everyone I knew watching was like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Apart from the people in charge. Like, how long can this go? Like, when do you get to a stage where your Ferrari top personnel have to step in? I don't know. Like, this is just, because the damage this is doing, like, Ferrari are a joke right now.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, they are.
Yeah, they're a laughing stock.
And it's really harsh to say, obviously, because, like, you know, it's not like they're not working hard, but people are just consistently overlooking important decisions. For races, honestly, Hungary is the worst strategy. I don't think we can even call it a strategy. It was just a series of decisions in that race.
You know what annoys me, though? It's like, all this work's gone into producing this really good racing
really
car.
Really good car, yeah.
Really good racing car. But that's not enough. You can't just have a great car. You have to have a driver who can extract performance. You have to have a strategy team who can deliver. You have to have a pit stop team who do bits. Like, it all has to come together. And I talked about this on the stream. It's a team sport. And all of those things have to fall into line. And I think it was easy to look at Mercedes dominance, you know, 8 constructors titles and, oh, it's just the car, or, oh, it's, you know, it's easy for Lewis, blah, blah, blah. No, I think we're seeing now that it's not easy to stay at the top. Toto Wolff has said this. And for a team like Ferrari, who, you know, we've had so little for so long, we know no constructors title since 2008, no driver since 2007. The Tifosi deserve better. Like, what next? What if you were in charge, if you're Mr. Ferrari, if you're Enzo, rest in peace, from beyond the grave, what are you doing? Like, what's the next step forward?
I think it has to be, like, at least not like a complete overhaul, but there has to be some kind of change at decision level. Whether it be just strategists or the people that are hiring the people that are doing, you know, whatever, in these big positions, there needs to be some kind of overhaul of some kind. Because the thing is, it's just for Ferrari, it's a multitude of things, it seems, every single weekend in decision making. And like I said before, you can't win a championship of any kind by throwing away more than 3 races in a season.
Yeah.
If you have a good car, they've clearly got competent mechanics and engineers.
Yeah.
They've brought a good car to the table.
That's it.
1,000%. That cannot be on them.
No.
Apart from the engine reliability. But that can't really be on them. But I don't know, decision making, there just needs to be...
Yeah, I mean, again, and, you know, it makes sense to, you know, build a powertrain that, you know, it might blow up, but you can bring reliability-related fixes. You can't bring performance-improving fixes. So that's
fine.
I get that. That's fine. But I do wonder as well, you know, are we giving Ferrari more scrutiny because of what's happened and because they're fighting at the front? Because, you know, for example, throwback to, for Norris at Russia, when things went wrong, you know, that... decision, that poor decision that McLaren made by not telling Lando to come in, like, that doesn't get the same amount of scrutiny if he's in P12. Like, Leclerc did the same thing.
Yeah.
And we don't talk about that because it wasn't a battle for the win. So do you think, like, how much of it do you think is, like, we're giving more scrutiny to Ferrari because it's Ferrari and they're at the top?
I think there's a level of, like, it's... we're giving them scrutiny because they're at the top. Like, I think, to be honest with you, there's been some mad blunders from Alpine this year, strategy-wise. Mm-hmm. They've got a lot wrong with Alonso. McLaren have struggled at times as well with Ricciardo and Lando and not necessarily extracting the best out of the pace they have and then, you know, producing a result. But also, I just think because it's Ferrari, I think a lot of the time we do like to clown Ferrari because they do have a history of this.
Yeah.
But this is probably some of the worst that I've seen.
It's an easy own goal.
It is, yeah.
For us, it just gives us the... Don't give us the ammunition.
Yeah, it's easy bangs on Twitter, do you know what I mean? Like, it just is, like, at the end of the day, like, they're giving us the ammunition. So.
It's frustrating, but... Well, you mentioned Alonso earlier, and obviously Alonso is a driver who used to drive Ferrari and left.
Knows all about the pain.
This isn't the first time we've had pain at Ferrari at all. But talking of Fernando, let's briefly cut, because there were a few incidents in the race that I think were worth note, and we have to kind of talk about the end of the Kemmel Strait, Hamilton and Fernando. There's been some wild words coming out of Fernando Alonso's mouth.
There's been some juicy things said, I'm not going to lie. Yeah, basically implying, what was it? He only knows how to race and start first, basically. He doesn't know how to actually, no, start and finish first. That's the one.
Basically.
Yeah, he doesn't know how to race in the pack. It was basically what Fernando implied.
Which isn't going to do, you know, Hamilton, Alonso fan relations any good, because, you know, them two fan bases, like, you know, there's history there.
From day one.
Okay.
From the get-go.
From day two.
Literally day one. As soon as Lewis arrived in the paddock, disliked each other.
But what do you think of the Fernando Alonso we've got at the moment? Because obviously there's all this talk around, you know, obviously he's gone to Aston Martin. Omar Safnauer's talked about and talked openly about, you know, you can't keep your skills, your reflexes forever.
Yeah.
Yet we saw a Fernando who, you know, delivered a fantastic result this weekend, I think, all things considered.
Yeah.
Great job in qualifying. Like, where does Fernando sit, in your opinion, like relative to the rest of the field and relative to the rest of his career?
I think obviously, like, when we sort of measure it to the rest of his career, like, it's not going to be the same, you know, sort of right now he's in his 40s, but
he still thinks he's in his prime.
I don't think he's like crazily crazy.
But is that just gas?
It is gas. Okay. It is gas a bit. Okay. But I don't think it's wildly far away. Like, I think he's doing a great job this season. Again, the table doesn't really reflect him. He's been very unfortunate at times this season for Alpine. What I would say is I'm really enjoying a Fernando Alonso that cares even less about everybody else than he did before. And that was already quite a low amount. Like, he's in it for himself this season. He's got his deal with Aston Martin now.
Yeah.
He doesn't have any affinity really to doing anything for the team with Alpine. Mm. He's getting on the radio at Hungary, berating Esteban for squeezing into the pit wall. I'm enjoying it, Pat. It's good entertainment value.
Yeah.
But I think he did a great job this weekend, honestly. I know he obviously nursed a damaged car to a very good result. We touched on the incident itself. Hamilton, obviously, you know, Lewis admitted that it was probably his fault he took on Fernando. And I think that was our initial
That's
reaction.
That's what it looked like.
I mean, Alonso's already on the curb. He can't disappear.
There's not much more Alonso could have done there, it was a shame, because I think it would have been interesting to see how, because Lewis has had the measure of George in these last few races, and George finished fourth. Wasn't that far behind Science as well, was he? I think there could have been maybe a podium on the cards potentially for Lewis if things hadn't gone so wrong early doors, which was a shame. But also another driver we have to talk about, and we talked about this at the start of the stream, didn't we? Will Daniel Ricciardo finish behind Lando Norris, given that Lando started at the back with the penalty and Ricciardo qualifier? I think he was seventh.
He was seventh on the grid, seventh on the grid.
And of course, Lando did finish ahead. Look, we were talking about, you know, did you just yoink? I don't know how much to... Daniel, he just wasn't good. I don't know what to say. It feels like I've said all this before, I guess.
Yeah, you know? I feel like it feels like you're just rehashing stuff that's happened in previous Grand Prix. And we all love Daniel Ricciardo.
Of course.
He's one of the best characters on the grid. We all love him. But that race definitely epitomised his time at McLaren, I feel a bit. There was no real reason for him to end up finishing 15th. Like, he finished behind both the Astons that he started ahead of. Finished behind his teammate, who was sort of eight positions behind him on the grid. Obviously, he was always going to lose a couple places with like Leclerc and Verstappen coming back through, but still finished behind Albon, finished behind Zhou, people like that. And he got battered about by mid-table runners. It wasn't like everyone filtering through. He just kind of moved backwards.
The numbers don't lie. But what I worry about is that, you know, Daniel's gone through all this drama and he's leaving the team. And we've seen drivers, you know, Sergio Perez getting kicked out of Racing Point. Valtteri Bottas, when it was announced that he was going to be, you know, wasn't going to be continuing on with Mercedes, he seemed to kind of pick up performances, sense of freedom maybe there.
Yeah.
I do worry that, because Daniel said he hasn't got anything confirmed for next year. There's nothing kind of down confirmed in writing. And there's been a lot of talk about a lot of teams, but I worry that if he doesn't pick up some good results, that teams that might have maybe considered him, even, you know, after mid-season, might start to second guess.
Yeah, exactly. And It's a difficult one because I do really empathise with him. I know we give him
on a human level. Of course, yeah,
we give him a bit more of a bit more leeway. Yeah, more leeway because he's Daniel Ricciardo. But genuinely, like the way that went down with McLaren, being urged to put out a statement, being like, "Yeah, don't worry, guys, I'm going to see out the rest of my contract," and then a month later, he's out of there. It's never going to be good for his mental state. But ultimately, he does have to pick up some good performances before the end of the season, because I believe if you went to Alpine, for example, you would see the old Daniel Ricciardo start to return.
I agree.
There's potential in there again because he's in surroundings that he's used to, people that he's used to. I think it's maybe a better just general atmosphere for him to be in. And maybe there'd be a bit more of an emphasis on him being at least... not a number one driver. I think Esteban Ocon deserves equal treatment
with
what he's done recently in comparison to Ricciardo. But maybe I think Lando can, he's kind of like a star boy of McLaren, come through the ranks there. It might give him a bit more of a feeling of belonging almost if he goes back there. But if he doesn't go back there, then I am fearful for him, because I think he would continue maybe to free fall a little bit in a team like Williams, for example, where he's not even got a good package there.
Because I just think that Alpine is the most sensible choice.
It is for me.
For both parties, because I think that, Alpine have data. They can look back on the data of Daniel relative to Esteban in 2019 and 2020. They've got that information that they can use to make an educated guess as to where Daniel will be relative to Esteban. Because I think, Esteban and Alonso, there's not been a huge amount in it, but I do think Alonso has had the better of it. But at the same time, like, Daniel was miles clear of him in 2020. I know that was Esteban's first season at the team, but I just think that, with that information, and I know it's a new generation of car, but at the end of the day, that team knows how to deliver a car to Daniel Ricciardo that he can drive quickly. The only other team that can do that is Red Bull. Mm-hmm. Like they know how to do that because they've got all the historic data on Daniel Ricciardo. So like you say, I agree. I think that's the best opportunity out there. But I will say that there is obviously another team that you could argue now is, I think Valtteri Bottas, considering he had Williams and Alfa Romeo to choose from, he's probably salivating at the minute because Audi, which we didn't talk about during the last
No, we didn't.
Audi, 2026.
Yep.
What were your first feelings around it? The announcement.
I love this. What we need. That's the way I said that.
I love it
if Audi beat them. I love it. What we need is we need more big brands like this.
And we do.
There's an engine suppliers in Formula One. I think it's always going to be a great thing for competitiveness, for pushing other teams forward. And it's just generally exciting. Obviously, I know that there's rumors they're going to be linked to Sauber.
Seems like that's going to be
right now. But I think it'll be great. So obviously in that sense, for those that may be confused, is that therefore going to mean that it's more of a, you're not getting a brand new Audi team, like an additional team to the grid, you're just getting a replacement almost?
Yeah, because I think it's fair to say, looking at Sauber as a team, and it's still Sauber, Alfa Romeo is essentially a glorified title sponsor.
Yeah.
In the same way that Cognizant and Aston Martin, but it's just they have the kind of whole team. I think given the resource, there's so much talked about the Sauber wind tunnel. There's that classic Sauber Mercedes that was like a Le Mans god, because that team has an insane facility.
Yeah.
And given the facility that they haven't been delivering over years. Like, it's been a long time since we've seen a Sauber competitive anywhere near the front.
Yeah.
And
W Sauber.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Bits of days, yeah.
And that was like the last kind of big manufacturer that kind of came in and partnered with Sauber. Sauber have been known to kind of do that before, essentially, like, put themselves out there on the auction block.
Sponsor us. Basically, that is what it is.
Andretti wanted to take over Sauber. Sauber basically just were like, we want hundreds and hundreds of millions, and they were like, no, thank you.
Nope.
But I just think that that's the perfect team for, I want to see more teams. I think most people do. Yeah. Right? I think 12 would be lovely, but I think for Audi to come in and take over that, team based in Switzerland, you're going to develop the power units in Germany. I think it makes a lot of sense. And like you say as well, having a big manufacturer, I think that gives a lot more legitimacy to the sport.
Yeah.
And the fact that a new manufacturer's coming in, there was talk of, you know, maybe Honda are flip-flapping again.
Yeah.
There's talk of maybe, because obviously Porsche seemed to be lined up.
Yeah, that's another thing. Because obviously it's to do with 2026 regulations, isn't it?
And exactly.
More freedom new power for units. These brands to come through, yeah. Porsche would be a sensational.
Porsche would be sick.
I feel that would be amazing. And yeah, it's always going to drive Formula One forward. If you've got more of these brands coming through, Honda thinking about coming back does not surprise me.
No,
honestly, they can't go more than like 4 years without being like, oh,
you know that come back. You know those kind of people who just consistently like regret their decisions and they're always just changing their minds and like, oh yeah, no, I'm gonna do it. Like, Honda, they've done it so many times now.
Yeah.
I'm just sick of it.
Honda are the uni student that has done freshers year like four times.
Bro, that Braun,
they can't decide on a degree they want to do.
That Braun should have been a Honda.
Yeah, thousands. Yeah.
That Braun should have been a Honda. Yeah. Like, what were they doing?
That's so, the biggest blunder of all time, I reckon.
My God. It's one of them, isn't it? And it, look, on, obviously Honda have worked with Red Bull to produce a very good power unit. We saw that this weekend.
Yeah.
That's a quick team. But yeah, I think it's exciting going forward. I think, again, Valtteri, whether he knew about this potential deal happening when he signed.
Yeah.
I mean, if he didn't, then...
well, good news for you, Valtteri, mate.
Happy boy. Because you got to think that with a manufacturer, with the prowess of Audi, that... Because I know Alfa Romeo have got a little history in F1, but I never really felt of them as a serious manufacturer team because they're not ultimately, they're just a title sponsor.
They're not. If we look at Alfa Romeo like in motorsport, we're looking back into like the 1950s, you know what I mean? Like, this is
Giuseppe Farina, bring him out.
Yeah. some of the brands that are involved in F1 didn't even exist when Alfa Romeo were last involved. So,
yeah.
But with Audi, you look at sort of like their LMP ventures and stuff in Le Mans.
They're a serious
team. They
have
like a dominant phase, DTM, all that sort of jazz. They've been involved in a lot of motorsports for a lot of time. Porsche as well have done similar things when it comes to sports car racing. So these are serious, serious brands that could leave like a serious, serious imprint on F1. So very excited, I'm not going to lie.
But also, Andretti is still, there's still noise about Andretti joining. I think they would have to do it themselves from scratch. They are building a brand new facility, which looks suspiciously like the MTC. I don't know if you've seen pictures of it, but it's in, it would be in Indiana. Mm-hmm. It'd be like in Indianapolis. So, I mean, I don't know how, I guess as the calendar becomes less European centric, because I was looking, right? So of this 22 race calendar, 12 or 11 races in Europe.
Yeah.
So it's like half, if not over half, which I don't think is right. I think going forward, I think the sport should look to expand into more kind of regions.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there's a lot of talk about Spa this weekend. Has now been extended. So that's confirmed. Yeah,
confirmed,
so we'll be on next year.
Year extension, yeah. So
exactly.
Next year, yeah.
But what do you make of the calendar? Do you think that, because you can't, there's, I feel like there's too many races as is.
Yeah.
Like, there shouldn't be more races. But then if we want races in like, you know, Kyle Army in South Africa, if we want to go back to Sepang maybe, and obviously we've got Vegas come in, another race in South America, I think, you know, there's only Interlagos at the moment. Yeah. So what do you think about the scope of the sport? Like, do you think that needs to change?
It's a really, really difficult one because it feels like there's too many places to go for the amount of time that we have a year. Like, you know, workers in Formula One are already so, you know, the teams are so overworked.
Oh,
the
man, staff,
triple headers
that's
in the
much,
middle man. Of a year is crazy. I know we've just come off the back of a summer break, so there's at least a bit of a time to refresh there, but they're still busy during that time period. You know, flyaways. The calendar's also been a bit weird this year, where there's been a few races where you're like, why is that there, given it's a week? Like, so Miami being straight after, like, you know, it's a bit of a strange one. Equally, yes, a race in Kyle Army would be amazing. You know, there's not a Grand Prix in Africa. Mm. There needs to be one. Places like Argentina, for example, or whatever. Las Vegas, again, you're getting quite a few races in America because that's where the money is and that's where the big, big interest is now.
Yeah.
It's tough because there should be more areas and more Grand Prix that we can go to. Maybe it's a situation of taking races that aren't as loved in Europe away. Obviously, we've kind of lost Sochi now. Those sorts of Grand Prix, those sorts of countries and stuff, and replacing them with areas that don't get as much love in the F1 calendar. But it's tricky. I don't think you can really add more. I think more than 24 Grand Prix, and you're really risking the actual health of the people that work in it.
Yeah,
all the time.
Yeah, like I've spoken to some, you know, people who work and have worked at teams, and it is a big problem. I think that doesn't get the coverage that it deserves. How much. Yeah, it's easy to sit here and say, oh, yeah, but they've got the dream job. They fly around the world following F1. Yeah, but I don't think it's anywhere near as glamorous as any of us, like myself included, like think of it being. Because you get stages. I can't remember who I was chatting to, and I was like, oh, did you see much of, what race? I think it was Spain. Mm. So, oh, and I was like, no, you just go straight to the track, straight to work, 12-hour day, like in the hot. And then you're just straight home.
And you
like,
go home.
There's no experience. I was like, oh, do you see any Barcelona? The big, you know, the big cathedral that's still not finished yet? Nope,
yeah,
no.
No, go around and see the city, do some sightseeing.
Look, again, oh, like, woe is me. Like, oh, you work for an F1 team, blah, blah, blah. I understand where people get with that. But at the end of the day, like, I think there's more the sport can be doing. And like you're saying, it's like reducing the distances that are being covered, the amount of triple headers, and just not more races. Because, you know, we love the sport, but there's real people, I think, that
spending time away from their families and stuff for 4 weeks at a time because
I don't think it's much to ask for the sports to do a bit more. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. I agree. And I think, yeah, like you said, it's sort of things like streamlining the calendar so that you're not going from here to here, then back to here again,
and
then over here. It just doesn't make any sense. You know, you need to try and maintain the health of the people that are working in Formula One. So I don't think having more Grand Prix is the answer, but maybe just trying to pinpoint replace ones, even if the problem is it's difficult
because you have to alternate. Take some away.
It's difficult because you can't even alternate. You can't say, yeah, we're going to do Malaysia this year, and then because these tracks and circuits need to survive, they can't, you know, they need the money from 8-year contracts and stuff to be able to run Formula One. They can't just do 1 year, then sack it off for 4 years, then come back again.
Well, that's,
it's a difficult balancing act.
There's so few grade one circuits in the world. Mm-hmm. But I think partly for that reason, you know, to maintain a grade one circuit and it to be alternating isn't necessarily sustainable. But again, sustainability is a big part of the new regulations. And like you say about the traveling, like I think the sport needs to do more there. Mm-hmm. Because logistics are by far, there was a report F1 put out, I think it was in like 2019. And I remember going through it for a video I was doing. It was saying like, 45% of F1's total environmental footprint, and they're including everything in this. Obviously, they've got to estimate a lot of it. It's like fans, you know, how far fans have to travel to get to the tracks, all of that. Yeah. It's like 45% is just logistics, is just moving things. It's not even using things, it's just moving things.
Yeah.
So they need to do more about that. Obviously, we've got the new, you know, new engine regs prompted the Audi announcement.
Yeah.
Half electric, half internal combustion, fully sustainable.
Yeah.
How you feeling? Are you feeling excited about that?
You got your
eco.
Yeah, zero. Yes. My eco hat on. My green hat.
He's all green.
I'm all green. I'm wearing blue. There's a shade
blue
of green.
Blue like the sea, mate. The ocean.
Blue like the sea, mate.
Save the ocean.
Save the ocean. Save the sky.
No, but what do you make of it? Because I think most people are happy, but obviously there is a, you know, some people are like, oh, yeah, but like, what does it matter changing what fuel the engines run on? Like, why is that important when there's all this other stuff going on? What do you make of it?
I think, there is part of me is kind of like, obviously it's going to be hugely helpful, and having like completely sustainable fuel is not only just like a big step for Formula One, but actually just a big step generally for us all. Like realistically, that's technology that can be harnessed for our road cars and stuff. But like you said, sorry,
my man needs a water. Go on, get it down, your son. It was a podcast. It's fine.
Ah, I'm flowing. Yeah. So it's easy. Like it's kind of like I said, you know, there's other topics that need to be tackled. You know, if I'm still driving a massive truck that's going 0.6 gallons.
Exactly.
What's the phrase? I don't drive cars. Miles to the gallon.
You don't drive cars?
No, I don't. I can't drive. I ain't got.
How can you do it?
I ain't got a license, bro. No, I don't. Yeah.
I'm mad.
That's a bit. I'm 25. I'm big 25 now, and I can't actually drive.
There you go. Yeah, miles per gallon. You're right.
Miles per gallon. Yeah, that's it. Why is it gallon? That's weird, isn't it? Yeah, is there anything else that uses gallon in the world?
Yeah, but in the UK, we can't make our mind up. We use centimetres, we use kilometres, we use
kilometers
miles.
Gallon is probably the worst thing. That sounds terrible. That is one of the worst. That's definitely the worst metric ever.
Kilometres per gallon. Make it a thing.
Per centilitre.
No, but you're right. Like, there's all these other things that come into, but F1's always been a huge part of F1 has been about leading technological advancements, usually in the automotive industry, but also in applications that go beyond the automotive. You know, you will never be able to calculate it, but you could make an argument that F1, the technology that's been developed in F1, the good that has done has offset all of the damage of moving it around. I'm not saying this is true. I'm just saying you could make that argument that it's given back more. Mm-hmm. I don't think it has, but you could make that argument that it's given back at least something, right?
Yeah.
In terms of developing hybrid powertrains. If they weren't developed by F1, then we wouldn't be using hybrids in our, you know, road cars as quickly as we have been. So I think having, you know, a huge electrical component is, if you want to keep an ICE, then you have to have a big hybrid component for it to be relevant going forward.
Yeah.
Like you said, I think it's really exciting. Like, they're talking about carbon capture, which I think is sick, because carbon capture is like the answer. Because you just, like, all this carbon in the atmosphere, you just
nab that. Yep. Cheers, mate.
Stick it in the car.
Slap that in an Alpine. There we go. Boom.
You know what I mean? Like, I think it's really exciting from that point of view. That's always been a big part of Formula One. And I think it has to be. The fact that a brand like Audi and the VW group at large have seen what F1 are proposing and been like, yeah, we're going to rubber stamp that. I think that's a huge, you know, that's a huge tick for F1 moving forward. So yeah, I think it's really important.
No, 1,000%. These big brands being interested in seeing like the future of Formula One and being ready to invest in it like that from an ecological standpoint.
But more in the short term as well, in terms of changes to the sport, there has also been, we've seen what what's happening for next year, raising ride heights slightly. Mm-hmm. Did you see Christian Horner's quote?
I didn't know, actually.
So he basically, the ride heights, I think, being raised from like 15 to 25 mil, I think, in a reduction of porpoising effort, and because Christian's been moaning about it for a while, hasn't he? And then he was, oh, it's going to happen, and he was, oh, don't worry, like, you know Jerry always tells me that size doesn't matter, so just losing 10 mil. I'm like, bro, people lambasted me for calling him Horny Horner.
Horny Horner is he's moving a bit mad. That picture of him, by the way, where he's like
this one, I mean, he's got a track record.
We can't put that on the show.
Why not?
Well, maybe we can. Actually, no, we can.
Yeah, we can put that on the show.
Slap it on. Don't, Christian, get any good ideas.
Don't slap it on. But look, yeah, so obviously Red Bull weren't too happy. Our car's fine, so why change? Obviously, they're going to say that. But ultimately, do you think it was the right choice for the FIA to intervene, I guess?
Intervene. Yeah, I think so, because it's difficult, isn't it? Because you in an ideal world, you want to leave the teams with just their own devices and how they're going to fix it. But some of the porpoising that we've been seeing during the course of this season has been like
a yoke,
like absolute a yoke,
the whole egg.
It's been crazy. People bouncing around. We was in Canada, I think, and Spain, obviously, as well. Spain won Catalonia.
Baku Lewis as well.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
That was
ridiculous. Oh, yeah, of course. He couldn't even walk.
Yeah, and Ricardo as well. Ricardo was struggling. Carlos. Yeah,
yeah, man. I know what backache's like, man. I'm 25 now.
I've got a slip disc, mate.
Slip disc. My hip is gone, I'm pretty sure, mate. Give me a Zimmer frame and it'll help me, honestly. I think it's a good thing again, because I think it's helping out the drivers, to be honest with you, because if the teams can't do it, then the sport itself has to intervene.
Yeah, because I don't think you can rely on the teams to not, like, even the drivers themselves have said it, like, if I have to take a bit of discomfort for performance, they'll take it.
This is the thing. So the teams aren't going to do it of their own devices, are they? It literally relies on the FIA to do it.
Exactly. So I think given that mindset, which you have to expect, and you want the drivers to be able to, like, you know, like, they're top tier athletes. At the end of the day, you don't get to where you are without some, but you shouldn't have to tolerate having your spine ruptured
up.
Like that shouldn't be a thing. So I think ultimately it was a good choice for them to intervene, but I guess we'll see next year, because obviously you know, I think we've got to the stage of the season now, mate, where the title is pretty wrapped up, right?
Yeah, we're done.
There's maybe a constructors P2 for Mercedes if Ferrari throw it.
And it's me wrapping up the title.
It's finished, mate. But what do you think, like, for next year? Obviously, we've had new regulations, first season. Mm-hmm. It's always going to, you know, we're going to get, you know, another year of, you know, the cost cap, sliding development scale as well is a thing. So Red Bull and Ferrari will be kind of punished relative to whoever's at the back.
Yeah, yeah.
What are your expectations going into next year, given what you've seen so far of these, like, regulate, more I guess, of the regulations, you know?
Well, to be honest, I like where the regulations have taken us in terms of racing. It's still not perfect, and you're always going to get dirty air. Obviously, you know, this is the sport that we, you know,
that's racing.
But that's racing.
That's
racing. So you're always going to get that. But the reality is, it's definitely brought an easier element of overtaking and following people. I think we've definitely seen drivers be able to follow each other to at least a closer degree. You still get DRS trains. Mm-hmm. You still get trains, generally speaking. But at least there's a bit more hope of overtaking, I feel, at this point. I think what I would hope for next season and what I would expect is Mercedes to improve and move themselves back towards Ferrari and Red Bull. What I would hope is just generally get a bit of like an accordion effect of like sort of...
That's the dream.
That is the dream.
You want at least...
They're putting into place the motions.
Yeah, I think at least three cars battling for the title because we've had it in the past. Yeah. We've had it in the past. I mean, you look at what, 2010, you had... Lewis in the McLaren, you had Vettel and Webber in the Red Bull, and you had Alonso in the Ferrari, all within a chance of winning the title in the last race. So as much as that race was really boring, because I watched it back recently.
Oh God, it was terrible. Shouts out Petrov.
Yeah, mate, what a drive that was. The driver of the day that day, for sure, I think. I think we can get to that stage. And, you know, I think given the investment of McLaren, the potential upside of Aston Martin as well, you know, I just want to see... At least three cars battling at the front. Like, you're not going to get a complete spread, and that's kind of okay. Like, that's just sport. You know, not everyone's going to nail it. You can't, you know, otherwise it's make it a spec series. You know what I mean? I want there to be that creative. But I think as well, there's enough in the regulations, hopefully. I've spoken to some people on the inside who don't believe in, you know, the cost cap and don't think it's going to do what it's meant to do, because teams will always find ways to kind of circumvent it to an extent. But I think I'm optimistic. I'm cautiously optimistic.
I'm cautiously optimistic as well. At least that we get a closer field spread, I think, than anything else.
That's the aim.
Williams, it's up to you, please.
Please.
For the love of God. Like,
please deliver some...
Just give us something. Please
be more like your logo.
Maybe make Latifi a test driver as well, potentially.
Should we just quickly talk about Nicola?
Yeah.
Because he's just had an absolute shocker. Like,
not again, Nicholas. Come on.
I just...
Nicky boy.
Like, Albon's got a point. Nicky's stone dead last, spun out, took out Bottas. I think he had another kind of incident, didn't he? I remember watching it and thinking, like, Nicky, what are you doing? I think the time is up.
Look as I love Latifi as much as the next guy, okay?
But the meme has to stop.
At some point...
It's time to stop.
We've got to think about the sport over the Reddit, do you know what I mean? Like, Nicholas... You know what? He's a decent... He's one of those drivers that, for me, got to F2 and that was like the level. Don't get it twisted. To get into Formula 2, you have to be an exceptional racing driver, right?
Yeah.
And he won races there. He finished, second in the championship in
his third year?
Yep. This is another thing. By the time you're getting to a third year in Formula 2, we've just got to wrap
it up. But also, it wasn't the strongest field.
It wasn't a good field, was it?
Either.
Who did he come second to?
It was De Vries who won. And won by... I think it was a reasonable chunk he won by as well. I just think for Williams to, you know, they've signed Albon a long term. I think Albon's done more than enough to prove that he's at very least a competent driver. Yeah. At very least,
at least a mid-table.
And potentially, you know, again, it's hard to evaluate. Oh, rookie of the year 2019. I like to remind people of that. Of course, I do. I just think if Williams want to be a serious team moving forward, they have to get a driver in that other seat that can, you know, push forward and at least get close to Alex.
Yeah, push his teammate as well. Alex doesn't have any sort of real test at all.
No.
And neither did George.
And that's the thing. I think you can have a clear 1-2 driver if you're up the front, but I think when you're in the midfield or lower field, you have to have two drivers who can deliver, because you have to develop this car. You have to get results. You have to pick up points when there's opportunities. And Alex has shown that car can get points.
Yeah.
That's the thing. So who do they go with, do you think?
Well, obviously, for them, there's quite a few options almost, because they're sort of like an entry point almost to F1, I feel. Like there's a lot of drivers.
They've kind of become that, haven't they?
They have, kind of. You've got the Nick De Vries, for example, who's obviously just been in Formula E. You've got people like Josh Sargent, who's obviously in their Williams Young Drivers program.
Logan Sargent. Josh Sargent.
Josh Sargent. That's the football. That's the Norwich football. In my mind, I was like, why would I have said that? Yeah, Logan Sargent. My bad. Sorry, Logan. Yeah, Josh Sargent as well. Yeah, I don't think he's got. I don't think he's in line for a seat, to be honest.
Maybe.
Who knows? Again, entry point.
Latifi's not great. So.
Logan Sargent. he's a shout, obviously. I'd be interested, obviously, there's quite a few F2 guys, I think, that would be.
Yeah. Felipe's leading at the moment.
Felipe's
not
leading.
He's not fired down to any driver academy.
Yeah. Like a Jack Doohan or something like that. But there's options out there. Daniel Ricciardo, of course, as well. He's currently without a seat. So they've got a lot of options that would be better than the TV. Again, Nick, I'm so sorry, but please, man.
Yeah, I feel like for Williams, I think as long as Logan gets enough super license points, he just needs to finish P5. He's P3 at the minute in F2.
Yeah.
If he gets those points, then I think that suits his. But I think Williams are in no rush, really. I guess they can just evaluate later in the year.
Yeah.
I think, they're not going to throw the money at Ricciardo. Ricciardo needs to be prepared to take a huge pay cut, I think, if he wants to stay in the sport.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, look, he got the bag from Renault. He stole the bag from McLaren.
He got the bag from McLaren.
I think that if he wants to stay in the sport and recover some of this, because 2020 wasn't that long ago, I think Williams... It depends, because there have been rumours about Gasly. Autosport have been talking about Gasly to Alpine as well. So I do worry that door might close to Daniel. I'm not going to lie. But
yeah, because I mean, goes without saying, AlphaTauri is not an option for young Daniel. He's not that young Daniel. Anymore. he's not that young anymore. So obviously that's then a door that completely closes.
Mm.
Because AlphaTauri will either go in-house or go for someone like Colton Herta.
That's the point of that team, yeah.
So it would be real. It would be struggle season for him then.
Yeah,
but
big struggle.
To be honest, I would be interested to see someone like a Nick De Vries in a Williams seat.
I think he deserves an opportunity.
For what he's
given,
done
he won F2, won FE as well.
Yeah,
I think he would merit an opportunity, but I'd be interested to see. Yeah, if Sargent smashes F2, it's got to be easy him.
Yeah. I've really not been keeping up with the F2 standings, which is pretty poor for myself. But yeah, who's second?
It is still Teo Pourchaire, I believe.
Okay,
but he had a DNF this weekend because his car blew up. Which
nice,
is annoying.
Good stuff.
Classic mecha crime.
Very, very classic Formula 2 stuff, that.
That's always the way.
I'd say Teo Pourchaire's got time, man. He's still 12.
Yeah, like literally. He just turned 19. He's like
that's different.
Almost 3 years younger than Felipe Drogovic, which is pretty...
I'm not gonna lie, I thought Drogovic was old.
Drogovic is 20 old, 21, almost 20 22.
Old.
Old 20.
He's 20 old, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm 30 in January, so I'm in no position to judge. Were there any other talking points we should go over in this pod, mate?
Because we spoke about Audi, we've kind of done a bit of a rundown.
Audi.
Ferrari, the race, Ricciardo, Williams.
I think we're pretty much wrapped, mate.
Pretty much wrapped, yeah. Maybe some thoughts about, going into Zandvoort, what we think is going to happen.
Yeah, you're going to be there, mate. You excited?
Yeah, I'm going to be there first hand. I'm going to turn orange. I'm very excited.
Nice.
Pyro Central. Literally, but I will not be able to breathe. You don't understand. The people at home, I have the most severe asthma in the world.
Oh,
like,
shit, really?
I'm finished.
Oh, fuck.
I'm taking six.
That's actually your shit.
I'm taking six inhalers with me. I'll be done.
Oh.
Did you see, obviously, Austria when they were putting, doing
you
the pyro?
You couldn't see
down onto the track.
Yeah.
Do you reckon they'll get banned soon? No pyro, no party, of course. So.
I don't know. It's part, it's fan experience. There's not much that a fan could do, in terms of, I'd love TIFOs.
Mm.
Imagine TIFOs in the stands. That'd be sick.
That'd be great.
It gets... Oh, it's like going to a football game and there's a TIFO up in front of you and being oh, I can't see the game. Yeah, but it's part of the experience of being there.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. Look, if you really want to follow, and I've said this, right, because I've been lucky enough to go to a few races, right, and I've said this, if you really want to follow a race, don't go to a Grand Prix.
Yes, really not the way.
Go on Saturday, watch qualifying, right, see the cars going at full tilt, and then go home and watch it on Sunday.
And then watch it here on the Last Lap Show YouTube channel. That's what you need to
He's good.
That's what you need to do.
He's
instead,
good.
Instead of going to the Grand Prix. If you can't see, there's pyros everywhere and it's all orange.
He's
Get
good.
Your phone up.
He's very good. Right, should we wrap it there, mate?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we won't be seeing you on this weekend.
Yeah, no, sorry.
The Zandvoort Dutch Grand Prix.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We'll get you to send in a little video.
Yeah, I'll
we'll
do
get your
video.
Predictions. We need to get your predictions.
Yeah. That's cool.
We're going to do like head-to-head, I think, like predictions. Who can
we'll do
a little more
tournament and stuff. Yeah.
What's happening to the loser? What's the forfeit?
We need a forfeit, though.
Yeah, we need to figure. Well, let us know maybe in the comments below.
Yeah,
forfeits wherever you're watching this. Let us know what one of us should be. Punished. With.
Yeah, yeah. Get your forfeits down in the comment section below.
I've got no shame, mate. I'll do anything. So just depends how far we're prepared to go. But
yeah,
we'll
I would also as well.
Right, thank you everyone for listening, watching wherever you are in the world. Mm-hmm. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, Pixo, MySpace, Facebook.
Debo.
Net. Whatever.
Facebook.net. That's like some dodgy one, yeah. Like three Google pages along.
But yeah, thank you everyone for watching. Thank you everyone for listening. It's been a pleasure. And we'll see you this weekend for the Dutch Grand Prix and next Tuesday for the post-race podcast where we'll talk all about what happens. So hopefully a banging race.
Yeah, it should be a banger.
See you on the telly, mate, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see me in the orange.
Hiya. Bye-bye.
In a bit. Bye-bye.